As humanitarian workers, we always search for connections, for linking the dots. So let's hear more from our speakers. How is their work relevant to the ICRC? For Dr. Anna Maria Munoz, social scientist with the Mind, Behaviour and Development Unit at the World Bank, doing a behaviour map with communities is a way to devise better solutions, including in humanitarian settings.
When you see a problem, we jump immediately into solutions. But a solution is not a diagnostic. So we actually ask people to take time to think about, say, you have a problem. That's any problem. You immediately go, oh, well, that just do this. But then we ask people, take a deep breath and do a behavioral map. And basically map every action and every decision that needs to happen for that action that you want to happen at the end to take place. So say, for example, if you want a household to use chlorine to sanitize water, we assume, well, we give them chlorine, they'll sanitize the water. But if you think about everything that goes in between, how people collect the water, if they collect it, where do they store it? Where do they store the chlorine? Do they know if chlorine is good? Do they have views about the flavor? Everything. So then when you map all these decisions and actions that are involved into the final outcome, then you can think about where are the behavioral bottlenecks, as we call them, where you can do an intervention or where you can do things different.
Roque Sanchez Tirona is the vice president of the NGO RARE, based in the Philippines. She worked directly with local communities and used behavior change approaches to implement fishing reform.
In our case, I think because we work with coastal communities and it's really about getting them to understand that their resources are finite, but at the same time, it's something that they have the potential to actually see recover for the future if they work together. So it's really about helping them build a shared understanding of the situation, of the problem and the solution, and then helping them work together to come up with those solutions. That way, anything they decide around the rules and everything are things that they will want to actually comply with, because it's for their own future.
But what techniques did you use? Because putting people together is something, but how? You know, what are the tips and tricks?
Okay, so for example, when you bring them together, it's not just for a meeting. They actually play games. We make them play games where they're actually kind of competing against each other in a table and trying to outfish each other. And then they realize that, okay, this is not the kind of behavior that's going to help us because we're all out of fish. But at the same time, it's all tied to a new identity that's being forged. This is the professional fisher. Fishers would used to speak about themselves as, I'm just a poor fisher and there's no value in the work that I do. But celebrating them as the professional fisher that's doing the responsible thing by doing the following behaviors really builds up that sense of confidence and efficacy and knowing that they can actually affect the future.
Our next speaker, Dr. Albert Rizzo, also known as Skip, clinical psychologist, is currently directing the Medical Virtual Reality Lab at the University of Southern California Institute for Creative Technologies. We've asked him to tell us more about his work using virtual reality to treat PTSD patients.
We've done quite a number of studies using virtual reality to help patients suffering from PTSD to go back and confront and reprocess very difficult emotional memories, but in a safe place. And by going through this process, and it is a hard process, it's certainly hard medicine for, you know, a hard problem, but by going through this, we're seeing actual behavior change. We're seeing psychological improvement. So there's a lot of ways that you can look at this work and expand it. Helping civilians after going through a traumatic event may be a direction. Certainly, civilian applications are being developed right now for police, firefighters, first responders, because we just don't realize or we don't pay attention enough to the fact that they're confronted with traumatic events on a daily basis. It's routine in that occupation. And to neglect attention to their mental health issues, and to stigmatize it is a bad thing.
Dr. Jörg Kesseling, professor of clinical neurology and neurorehabilitation and member of the ICRC Assembly, has a message for us on the links between neuroplasticity and resilience.
So we can do training for our strength, or we can describe resilience in the emotional domain. And there, I'm, as some people say very kindly, I'm an MS specialist, and MS for me stands also for more self-confidence. And this is very important. Self-confidence does not mean that we feel better than anyone else, but that we take our life or our brain like a present.
A message that resonates with Dr. Gregor Hassler's advice to all of us through his lens as a neuroscientist and psychiatrist.
I mean, my advice is that the mission really to make a safe world should be the main mission and not be replaced by psychological methods to perceive the world as safer than it is. That's one thing. But I just want to say that a lot of these psychotherapies or what you know, neuroplasticity, this just works in a safe environment. These are not methods for adverse environments. And I think in the adverse environments, it really needs political change, but also very practical change and maybe a little bit of psychology to how to deal with adversity.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and don't forget to follow us on the Innovation blog.